Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve.
You should have gotten a card on your way in today. If you would get that out and a pen, I want you to think about this for a minute. On that card, I want you on the left-hand side to write the year that you were born. So you can see there's a space to write that. And then you're going to find that there's a little dash. And then after the dash, it says 20 blank blank, because we don't know what that year is going to be yet, right? But everybody's got those dates, right? We all have those years. You have a year that you came into this world, and you have a year that you're going to leave this world. And you know, the thing about those dates is we don't get a lot of say in when those things happen, right? You know, the year you came into the world, there was no one saying to you, "Are you ready? Are you ready to come in? Or do you want to do this?" Right? You didn't have any say. You just got brought into this world. And you really don't have much say about the year that you leave the world either. But man, that dash in between, that little dash in between those two dates, now what that's like, well, that's mostly going to be up to you. And that's what I want to talk about tonight, is that dash. Because, you know, we all get one. Right? We all get one of those dashes, and none of us get two, right? We all get one, none of us get two. And the thing about that dash is, it goes by so fast. You know, we think it's going to last forever, but man, it goes by so fast. Wise people have been thinking about this for a long time. In fact, God's been warning us about this for a long time. There's this passage in the Bible put up on the screen, but in the Old Testament, the book of Psalms, chapter 90, verses 5 and 6, it says, "You sweep men away." This is a person writing to God. And he writes, "You sweep men away in the sleep of death. They are like the new grass of the morning. Though in the morning it springs up new, by evening it is dry and withered." What's he saying? He's saying, your dash, it goes by so fast. And then he prays a prayer in verse 12. In verse 12, he prays to God, and he says, "Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." He's praying, "God, help us to use our dash wisely. Help us to use our dash wisely." Any of you guys ever see the movie About Schmidt? Came out several years ago, a couple of you, About Schmidt. It was this movie about this guy named Warren Schmidt. You know, there's a poet named Henry David Thoreau, and he once wrote that the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation and go to the grave with a song still in them. And that line perfectly describes the life of this character, Warren Schmidt, played in the movie by Jack Nicholson. The movie opens with Warren Schmidt sitting in a barren corporate office. He's at his desk and he's staring at the clock on the wall, just kind of watching the second hand as it slowly lurches around its face. There's a stack of boxes sitting next to him, and we realize that he's sitting there waiting for his career to expire. He's living out his last minutes of his career before retirement. Turns out that Warren Schmidt has been working as an actuary for an insurance company for the last 30 years. An actuary is a risk evaluator. They are an expert at assessing risk, and that's what Warren Schmidt's been doing for 30 years, but now it's his final day. And as he sits there and he stares at the clock, you can tell it's almost as if he's trying to feel something, but he can't. And so he just placidly sits there until finally his time is up, and he takes his things and he heads out to his car. He drives to a meaningless retirement dinner and then home with his wife, Helen. He and Helen have been married for 42 years, but they have very little relationship. In fact, he looks at his wife as they enter the house and he asks this question. He says, "Who is this old woman who lives in my house?" And she could say the same about him. They've lived very dutiful, very obedient lives, but have no passion, no real intimacy. And so he begins his new life in retirement, and he doesn't know what to do with himself. In fact, shortly after, just days after his retirement, he heads back to the old office, and he goes in to see his replacement, hoping that the guy might have some questions for him, but he doesn't. In an entire career of work, Warren Schmidt has not accumulated a single piece of information that might be useful to the man who replaced him. So he goes home and he begins his new life of retirement, which consists of sitting in front of the TV, watching television while eating sandwiches and potato chips. That's what he does day after day. One day, as he's watching TV, he sees a commercial for a children's charity, and he decides, kind of on a whim in this moment, to adopt a 6-year-old Tanzanian boy by sending $20 a month, a check to help this boy out. And the boy's name is Ndugu, and so he decides he's going to, you know, support him and start sending checks, and then he goes right back into his meaningless, monotonous retirement life. The movie is billed as a comedy, but it's actually more of a tragedy. The one comedic element in the movie, though, is that Warren Schmidt is encouraged to write letters to little Ndugu, the 6-year-old in Tanzania. And so he begins to write him letters about life in America, about American life. And the funny thing is, this 6-year-old would have no idea about life in America. But what we realize is that Warren Schmidt really has no idea about American life either. And so what we see is, we see Warren Schmidt have an experience, and then we hear him as he writes the letter to the 6-year-old in Tanzania, and he describes what just happened that we got to see in completely oblivious, aggrandized accounts. And he goes back to living his life. It turns out that Warren and his wife Helen had bought a 35-foot Winnebago Adventurer, this big RV, and their plan for retirement is that they're going to head out on the road and see the country together. But soon after his retirement, and right towards the beginning of the movie, his wife Helen drops dead in their kitchen. And Warren finds himself surprised, not at the enormity of his loss, but that he had so little to lose. He feels nothing. He starts going through her things after she dies in the funeral to try to get everything in order. And by going through her things, he discovers that his wife had an affair years earlier that he had never discovered with his best friend. Well, Helen and Warren had one child, a daughter who now lives in Denver, and is about to get married to a waterbed salesman. And so he feels like this waterbed salesman is not up to snuff for his daughter, and is, in his words, a nincompoop. And so he decides that he's going to go in the RV, go out to Denver, and stop the wedding. And he heads out there, but when he arrives in Denver, he quickly realizes that he has no relationship with his daughter. At best, things are torn, and it's a broken relationship. And so he can't convince her to not marry this guy, and the wedding goes on, and he gets back in his RV and heads back to Omaha where he lives. When he gets there, he walks into his empty house with his empty life. And he walks in just utterly depressed because he realizes he's empty. And this is his life. He's wasted his life. And I'll tell you, man, watching the movie, for some people, I think it probably hits too close to home. Because you watch it and you're like, man, that could be me. His life is not that far from mine. I could end up in Warren Schmidt's shoes, you know, come, I don't know how many years from now. And so the movie's about to end, but then there's this conclusion. Warren Schmidt walks in, he's utterly depressed, and he starts going through his mail, and he sees this letter from Tanzania. And so he opens it, and it's from a nun who lives in the village with little Ndugu. And she writes to Warren explaining how much help his donations have given the little boy, that now he has food, and he didn't have food before, and now he knows how to read because of the support he's getting, and he wasn't able to read before. And Warren Schmidt, reading this letter, just absolutely loses it. I mean, he falls apart, just sobbing uncontrollably, kind of his body heaving up and down, because he's sitting there thinking, you know what? Maybe I wasted my life, and maybe my marriage was a sham, and maybe I have no relationship with my daughter, but I made a difference in this one boy's life. I made a difference with my life. And I think there's a great point in the movie. I think there's a powerful point there because of this. Because Thoreau was right. Most people really do live lives of quiet desperation, and they go to the grave with a song still in them. And that's the reality that most of us are going to face in our lives. And the deal is this, that God gives a damn, as we've been talking about in this series, not just about you and your life, but also about the influence your life has on others. That what God wants to do is not just care about you, which he does, and we've talked about that, but that he also cares about the impact you can make in this world. And so God doesn't want Warren Schmidt's story to be ours. And so here's the deal. God, in the Bible, tells us how to live a life that isn't just a life that is fulfilling and joyful for us, but also is a life that really makes a difference in this world. And what he teaches us goes along with the movie, and it's completely countercultural. Like when you hear it and you start thinking about it, you're going to realize, wow, this is not what I have learned. This is not how I think. And so very few people will actually experience it, which is why so many live lives of quiet desperation and go to the grave with the song still in them. Here's what God teaches. God teaches that the way to a fulfilled life, a joyful life, and a life that has influence and impact on this world is a life of service, a life where we serve the needs of others rather than ourselves. You look at the life of Jesus, which I would encourage you to do, and one thing you'll see about Jesus is he was the most fulfilled and joyful person, I think, who ever walked the face of the earth. And not only that, he had the greatest impact with his life on this world. And so when you read that, you got to ask the question, why? Because we want that, right? We want to live lives that matter. We want to live lives that make a difference. We want to live lives that are personally fulfilling and that have a sense of purpose. So what was it about Jesus? Well, here's what he said. He said this. He said, I have not come to be served, but to serve and to give my life away. Jesus said, here's my secret. I didn't come here to be served. I came here to serve others and to give my life away. Now, I want to show you one of the places the Bible teaches us to do this. In Philippians chapter 2, so if you have a Bible, you can turn to Philippians 2. If you didn't bring a Bible with you tonight, you're fine. We're going to put the verses on the screen here in a second. And if you don't own a Bible, we'd love to give you one as a gift tonight. And so on your way out, if you want to stop by the Velcro bar, and they will give you a Bible. There's no catch, there's no cost. They will just give you a free Bible. We would love to do that. So Philippians chapter 2. Check this out. Really observe the words because they're very stark. So here it is, starting in verse 3. It says, do nothing. And if you have your Bible, you might want to underline or circle the word nothing. Do nothing out of selfish ambition. So it says, don't do anything because it's best for you. Don't serve yourself. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility, consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant. And so what it's saying is this. It's saying, listen, people who really have influence with their life are people who serve others rather than themselves. We have this saying at Verve. We say that we want to be people who turn the world upside down. We stole that phrase from the Bible. But we said, man, we want to be people who turn the world upside down. And what this passage is saying, the example that Jesus is setting, is listen, people who turn the world upside down are people who give their lives to serving others rather than themselves. People who give themselves and just kind of pour their life for the sake of others rather than themselves. And here's the secret. The secret is that's the path to fulfillment. The path to joy is not trying to take care of yourself, but trying to take care of others. Now, here's the deal. I think that sounds really attractive to all of us, right? I mean, we all want to live a life that makes a difference, and we all want joy. We all want to be fulfilled and have a sense of purpose, right? None of us want to live lives of quiet desperation and go to the grave with a song still in us. And so we hear that, and we're like, yes, I want that. We all want that. But the reality is very few people will live that out. It's just the truth. Very few people live lives where they feel like it, and it's true, that they are really making a difference and having an influence in this world. Very few people have this sense of personal fulfillment and joy. So why is that? Why is it that so few people choose this path of I am going to serve others rather than serve myself? I am going to give my life away rather than trying to seek for myself. Why is it that so few people choose that? Well, I think there's a bunch of reasons, and what I want to do tonight is I want to confront two of them, Okay? So I want to confront two of the biggest, most powerful reasons why we don't live this life that's being offered to us by God. Here's the first one. The first problem I think that a lot of us have with serving others and really living for other people is that it just seems too risky. Doesn't it? Really? Like, it's just kind of dangerous, really. When you think about it, so like this idea that, so what we're being asked to do is to live for the needs of others, not ourselves. To care about the interests of others, not ourselves. And you hear that and you start to think, okay, but who's going to care about me? You know, if I just live my whole life for other people, who cares about me? And so it just seems kind of risky, right? And you start thinking, wait, so what you're saying is, like I have very little time available. I'm a busy person. I have very little time. But what you're telling me is that I should spend more time volunteering and serving others. Yes, that's what we're saying. So what you're saying is, like I have very little money. I mean, I'm just kind of getting by. But what you're saying is that I should take my money and be generous with it and give it away to God and to people who need it more than I do. Yes, that's what we're saying. And you hear that and you're like, it's just risky. It just seems dangerous to live that way, doesn't it? Right? And I think that's one of the main reasons many of us don't live this life. And so let's think about this. Like let's really think about risk and danger, okay? In fact, let me ask you a question. What do you think is the most dangerous object in your house? There's a philosophy professor. His name is Larry Loudon. He's a professor of philosophy at the University of Hawaii, which is a really tough gig, I'm sure. But he's at the University of Hawaii, teaches philosophy, and he's written a book on risk and danger. And he devotes an entire chapter of this book to household risks. What are the most dangerous objects in your house? And he gives some statistics for the amount of times that people get injured by different things in their homes. Some of the things would not surprise you. Like, for instance, he reports that about 460,000 people a year are pretty seriously injured with kitchen knives. Okay, it makes sense. Another 100,000 people a year are injured by manual or power saws. Makes sense. But there are some things that he reports on that you're like, that's not what I would have expected. There are about 20 people every year who accidentally strangle themselves to death on drapery cords. I never would have known that. Check this out. He reports that about 4,000 of us a year will seriously injure ourselves on our pillows. On our pillows. He does not tell how we injure ourselves with our pillows. I want to know. So if anybody ever finds this out, please let me know. I would like to imagine it, and I'm thinking, is it like you're zipping up your pillow and you get hurt, or is it like you're practicing kissing on your pillow and you smother yourself? I don't know what happens with your pillow, but there's a lot of people who are injuring themselves with pillows. And so he reports on these different household dangers. So, hey, real quick, turn to somebody around you, a neighbor. You don't need to know them, or you can know them, whatever, and tell them, what do you think is the most dangerous object in your house? Okay? Take a second, real quick, turn to somebody. What is the most dangerous object in your house? All right. You got it? Okay, hey, I want to show you what I think is the most dangerous object in your house. Ready? Here it is. It's this. We have a name for this, don't we? We call this an easy chair, right? It's and that's exactly what we want. We want an easy chair. We want an easy life, and we'd like to do it in an easy chair. We also call this a lazy boy, right? Which is even more what we want. We want to be lazy boys in easy chairs, right? That's like perfection. No one ever buys a chair like this because of how it looks. It's not like, oh, it'll be a cool thing. We buy it because of comfort, right? Because we want to be comfortable, and it's a comfortable chair. And so I want to paint a picture for you of why I think this is the most dangerous object in your house. But to do that, I need a volunteer. And I promise you, this will be the easiest volunteer job in the history of volunteers. And so can I get somebody to volunteer for this? Awesome. Come on up. So he's going to come up, and I'm going to paint a picture for you of why this object is so dangerous. So let's hear it for our brave volunteer. All right. What is your name, sir? Josh. This is Josh. Everybody say, hey, Josh. So, Josh, here's your goal here. I want you, by the end of this whole thing, to be the most comfortable person these people have ever seen. I want you to be the most relaxed person ever, okay? So if you'd sit down, and first of all, I'm thinking the lights are a little harsh. And so if we could we dim the lights a little bit for Josh? Because he needs to get very, very comfortable. Can we dim those lights? All right, that's good. Josh, I got something for you. I've got some slippers for you. And so if you would take off your shoes, because I think you'll be more comfortable in slippers, don't you? And so let's put some slippers on you. And on the other side of the chair, once you get those on, you're going to find there's a lever. And so if you want to sit back in that, that would be great. And I guess something else, you know, there's a kind of food that we have that we want to be comfortable. We call it comfort foods, right? So I've got Twinkies, which is like the comfort of all comfort foods. So I got a Twinkie for you, and I got some chocolate milk for you, all right? And, you know, sometimes when you want to get really relaxed and comfortable, it helps to have some music. And so I asked Mike if he might serenade you a little bit, get you really relaxed. So just relax. You can have your Twinkie and chocolate milk.
Lullaby, close your eyes. Little Josh, have a Twinkie. If it helps you to sleep, Vince will go get you a Binky.
All right. Thank you, Mike. So, let me ask you a question about little Josh. Does little Josh look like he's ready to spring into action? Does little Josh look like he is ready for like an explosion of personal growth? Does little Josh look like he is willing and ready to like suffer for people in need if he needs to? If God were to call him to do it, he's ready to do that. I don't think so. And let me ask you some questions about you. Okay, about you. If you have devoted your life to the easy chair, if you have devoted your life to being as comfortable as possible, if you have devoted your life to trying to eliminate problems and eliminate stress and just have kind of an easy path through life, man, does that really make your heart beat fast? Does it? Does that make you just like wake up in the morning and get you to jump out of bed raring to go because you're so excited about what might happen today if you devoted your life to being comfortable? I don't think so. In fact, I think if I left Josh up here for the rest of the service, I think he'd fall asleep. So I'm going to have to make you go, man, because you look way too comfortable. So get out of here, brother. But thank you for volunteering. Let's hear it for Josh. And as he leaves... As he leaves, let me tell you why I think that's the most dangerous object in your house. I think the easy chair, the lazy boy, is the most dangerous object in your house, not because of what you do while you're in it, but what you don't do because you're in it. It's not what you do while you're in it, it's what you miss out on. It's the relationships you never deepen because you're stuck in the easy chair. It's the people in need that you never serve because you don't even see their need. It's the urgent prayers you never pray. It's the races that you never run, the battles that you were meant to fight but miss out on. It's the laughter you never laugh. It's the tears you never cry. It's the noble thoughts you never have. That chair is the most dangerous thing in your house, and it's not because of what you do while you're in it. It's because of what you miss out on, because your life is devoted to comfort, to taking an easy path. See, this is the irony of Warren Schmidt, the guy in the movie. Warren Schmidt took the easy path through life. He did life in an easy chair, and he prepared for an easy retirement by buying this 35-foot Winnebago Adventurer. But here's the irony of Warren Schmidt. He was an actuary. An actuary is someone who is a risk evaluator. They assess risk. The irony of Warren Schmidt's life is that he never took a risk at all, right? He lived his entire life for safety and in an easy chair. He never took a risk in his life, and he gets to the end of his life realizing he wasted his life. The only time he ever came close to taking a risk was seeing this commercial and deciding that he would give $20 a month to this kid in Tanzania. And when he gets to the end of his life, he realizes, and that's the only worthwhile thing I've ever done. And so, could I be an actuary for you tonight? Like, could I do a little bit of risk assessment for you? Because I realize that it seems risky, it seems dangerous to devote yourself to serving the needs of others rather than yourself, right? I mean, it seems kind of risky or dangerous to decide, I am going to go and I'm going to feed homeless people every week. To decide, I'm going to sign up and I'm going to start serving in the children's ministry. To decide, then I'm going to give God 10% of my income. To decide, you know what, I'm going to go and be a missionary in Africa for the rest of my life. Those things might seem risky, but they are not risky at all compared to doing nothing. None of that is risky at all compared to doing nothing, right? And so here's your risk evaluation. You don't want to get to the end of your life and realize that you lived a life of quiet desperation and that you're going to the grave with a song still in you. And I'll tell you this, the risk of trying to turn the world upside down is much smaller than the risk of doing nothing. And use your dash wisely. And the way you use your dash wisely is by taking the risk and choosing to live a dangerous life of serving others and pouring yourself out for the needs of others. So why don't we choose this life? I think the first reason is because it just seems too risky. It seems too dangerous. But there's a second reason, and here it is. The second reason that we don't choose to live for others and to serve the needs of others. The second reason we don't make a big difference with our lives is because we don't think we can. Because we don't think we can. My guess is a lot of you have been kind of having this thought roll around your head the last 10 or 15 minutes. Like I hear what you're saying. And I understand that you're saying, you know, we should serve others and turn the world upside down. But come on, let's just be reasonable here. I'm not going to turn the world upside down. I'm one person. You know, I'm not even like a special person. I don't have a position of power. I don't have any special gifts or abilities. I'm not going to turn the world upside down. You know, and so what could I do? Yes, I could serve on the host team here. I could give some money. I could invite my friend to come here. I could serve out. I could become a big brother or a tutor in an underprivileged school. I could pray for my sister. I could do something. But really, what difference is it going to make? And a lot of us will not choose to live this life because we don't think we can really make a difference. And I got to tell you, I understand that. I understand that thinking. I mean, really, to me, it's the story about Schmidt, this guy in the movie. It's supposed to be a feel-good ending. You know, the whole movie has been depressing. This guy's just got this horrible life. He's wasted his life. But then you get to the end, and he reads this letter about the changes that have happened a little in Dugudu's life because of his support, and he's crying, and it's supposed to be this feel-good ending where you're like, oh, he made a difference. But I got to be honest and say, when I saw the ending, I did not feel good. When I saw the end of this movie, I was like, but that's it? I mean, yes, it's good. It's great that he gave up $20 a month, and it's really cool that it made an impact on this kid's life, but that's all he has to show for his entire life. Really. Like, that doesn't make me feel good. That makes me feel really sad that's all he has to show. And so maybe that's what you're thinking. You know, I could pour my life out in serving others and do something, but is it really going to make that big a difference? Is it really worth it? I'm just one person. I can't turn the world upside down. And I would totally agree with that. I'm a very rational person. It makes sense. It's logical. I would totally agree with that if it wasn't for God. If it wasn't for God. Because it's true. You are just one person. You're just one person. What can you do? It's true. But you and God together in a risky partnership, you could turn the world upside down. You could. And if you don't believe that, well, then you obviously haven't heard about Bob. Let me tell you about Bob. There's a pastor in Washington, D.C. His name is Doug Coe. And Doug Coe became friends with this guy named Bob. Bob was an insurance salesman. And shortly after becoming friends, Bob decided to become a Christian. He wanted to follow Jesus with the rest of his life. Very new to Christianity, to the faith. And so he starts meeting every week with this pastor, Doug Coe, just to kind of explore his new faith, ask questions, try to understand, you know, how do I grow as a Christian, that kind of thing. So one day, Bob shows up for their meeting, and he's very excited and kind of confused. And he says to Doug, hey, this morning I was reading my Bible, and I read this verse. And in this verse, Jesus says this. He says something like, ask whatever you want in my name, and it will be given to you. Like, it's in the Bible, he says. Jesus says, ask for whatever you want, and I'll give it to you. And so Bob asks Doug Coe, he says, is that true? And Doug says, well, he says, yes. He says, you need to understand that verse in the context of everything the Bible teaches about prayer, but yes, that is true. I mean, if you ask Jesus for something, he'll give it to you. He answers prayer. Yeah, it's true. And Bob goes, wow, I didn't know. That's great. I guess I really should be praying for something. And Doug says, sure. And he said, well, I guess I'll start praying for Africa. And Doug says, Africa? He says, Africa. He goes, well, it's kind of a broad target. Maybe you should narrow it down a little bit. How about one country in Africa? And Bob says, okay, how about Uganda? And Doug says, Uganda? And he says, Uganda. And he says, do you know somebody in Uganda? Bob says, nope. He says, have you ever been to Uganda? Bob says, nope. But Bob wanted to pray for Uganda. And so Doug sets up this kind of unique arrangement. He says, well, let's make this fun. Here's what we should do. You make a commitment that you will pray every single day for Uganda for 6 months. Okay? At the end of those 6 months, if nothing spectacular has happened, nothing amazing has happened, I will pay you $500 for having prayed for Uganda for those 6 months. But if something really incredible happens and Jesus seems to answer your prayer like he promises in the Bible, then you have to pay me $500. And if you forget to pray, you don't pray every day, then the deal's off, nobody gets any money. And Bob says, okay, let's do it. By the way, this is not a prayer program that we offer here at Verve. But Doug was apparently a very creative guy. So Bob begins to pray every single day for Uganda. And a month goes by, another couple months go by, nothing happens. Nothing, doesn't seem to be any answer to this prayer. Until this one night, Bob went to a dinner in Washington, D.C., and he's at this big table with a bunch of strangers, and they're all kind of socializing, and finally somebody says, well, we should go around and introduce ourselves, tell what we do. And so they start going around the table, and up to this point, Bob had said almost nothing. He's just kind of quietly listening to everybody else. But as they go around the table, this one lady, finally it's her turn, and she says, hi, my name is, and she says, what I do is I run an orphanage. Actually, I run the largest orphanage in Uganda. And it was like Bob suddenly saw $500 start to sprout wings and fly away. But he couldn't help himself. He just sprang to life. He's like, in Uganda? She said, yeah. And he says, well, tell me about your orphanage. Tell me about your country. And he just starts asking her question after question after question. And so finally, she stops him. She says, you're obviously very interested in my country, very passionate about it. Why? And Bob's like, well, somebody's kind of paying me $500 to pray. It doesn't matter. He starts asking more questions. And finally, this lady says, well, you're so interested. Would you like to come to Uganda and tour my orphanage? You could be our guest for a while, and we could show you everything we do and just kind of show you around a little bit. And Bob later said, he was like, man, I was so excited about that idea. I would have left that night if she let me. But he says, yes, I would. And so they make arrangements, and so he's going to go to Uganda. Well, a little while later, he goes to Uganda. And he spends time touring the country, but mostly in this orphanage. And he was just appalled at the lack of basic health care, just the absolute poverty people live in, and that they had no medicine, no doctors. And so finally, Bob goes back to America. He can't stop thinking about it. And so what he eventually did was he started writing letters to large pharmaceutical companies. And he described the abysmal conditions of the people in Uganda and in this orphanage, and that they have no medicine. And he wrote to these companies. He said, I know that you have vast amounts of unsold medicine every year that you just throw out. Instead of throwing it out, would you please donate it to this orphanage in Uganda? And some people actually responded to that request. In fact, the orphanage received over $1 million of donations in medical supplies. So Bob gets this phone call from the lady he met at the dinner who runs the orphanage. She said, Bob, this is unbelievable. We've never had anything like this. We're besides ourselves. It's amazing. We want to have a celebration for what's happened, and for you to be the guest of honor. Would you please come back to Uganda and let us just honor you and thank you? And we're just having a celebration. This is amazing. You've changed this orphanage. And Bob said, sure. I mean, I didn't do it for that, but sure, I could come. And so he flies back to Uganda for a second time. And they have this big celebration. Bob is the guest of honor in Uganda. Well, the president of Uganda comes to the celebration. and because it's the biggest orphanage in the country, and it's a big deal. And so the president meets Bob and says, hey, how long are you here for? He says, a couple more days. He says, tomorrow I'm not busy. Would you like me to give you a tour of the capital city, Kampala? Bob says, that would be great. And so the next day, the president of Uganda and Bob go out on this tour of Kampala. And as they're driving past this prison, Bob says, well, what's the group of prisoners kind of over by themselves over there? And the president says, well, actually, those are political prisoners. Bob says, oh. And that seems like kind of a bad idea. You should probably let them out. Continue the tour. A couple of days later, Bob flies home. A couple weeks after that, Bob gets a phone call. And he answers the phone, and the person on the other end of the line says, hey, this is the State Department of the United States government. Is this Bob? Bob says, yep. He says, Bob, were you recently in Uganda? Bob says, yep. He says, when you were there, did you meet the president of Uganda? Yep. Did he take you on a tour of the capital city? Yep. Did you make any statements about political prisoners during that tour? Bob says, yeah. And he says, what exactly did you say to him? Bob, and it's all a true story. Bob says, I told him that it was a bad idea and he should let him go. Well, the State Department representative explains that they had been trying for years to get the president to allow those political prisoners to go to no avail. But they had just been informed that morning that all the prisoners had been released. And when they asked why, they were told that it was because of Bob. And the State Department was calling to thank Bob for what he had done to release those political prisoners. A couple months later, the president of Uganda called Bob and said, Bob, I am rearranging my government. We're making some much-needed changes. I'm selecting a whole new cabinet. I was wondering if you would come back to Uganda and spend 3 days praying for me that I would have wisdom to make the right decisions in what I'm doing. And so for the third time, Bob flies to Uganda, this time to pray for the president as he changes his government. So let me ask you this. What difference could you make? Really? You're just one person. Well, you could turn the world upside down. You could. You and God together in a risky partnership, you could turn the world upside down. Listen, and you got those cards, and I hope you'll keep those cards and put them somewhere where you can look at it and think about it. You got those cards, right? And on that card is the year you were born. And on that card is, you know, this kind of mysterious year that you're going to leave this world. And you didn't have much control or say over either of those dates. But there's that little dash in the middle. And what that dash turns out like, and that's mostly up to you. So use your dash wisely. You know, you only get one, right? No one gets two. You only get one, and it goes by so fast. And so what are you going to do with your dash? You know what you could do? You could use it to turn the world upside down if you're willing to take the risk and if you believe you can and if you team up in a risky partnership with God because he cares about your influence. And so use your dash wisely. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to pray for us. And I'm just going to pray that God would give us hearts of wisdom. And from the words of that Psalm 90, that we might number our days aright. That we would understand that we only get one dash and it goes by so fast. So God, help us use our dash wisely. And then when we're done praying together, we're going to give you a chance to pray on your own. We're going to give you 2 minutes or so. There's going to be some music and a video if you want to check that out. But I really want to encourage you to use this time to think about this question of what am I going to do with my dash? How will I be a person who uses my dash wisely? I do not want to be a person who wastes my life. I don't want to live a life of quiet desperation and get to the grave with the song still in me. So what will I do with my dash? What is your next step? What is it that God's calling you to do to take a step in that direction? I don't know. I don't know what it is for you. Maybe your next step is to start volunteering here at Verve. You know, you can stop by the Velcro bar on the way out and say, all right, sign me up, man. What do you need? What can I do? What are some of the spots available? How can I serve here? Maybe the next step for you is to walk right past the Velcro bar and figure out how to serve in this community, to help this city be a more beautiful place. Maybe your next step is to adopt a child in a third world country and make a check and send it every month and see about the impact you could have there. Maybe it's starting to give generously to those in need or back to God. I don't know what it is for you, but I do know that you want to use your dash wisely. So let's pray. God, honestly, this is it's a tough topic. And the reason it's so difficult is because it's just the reality of our lives. Most of us are going to miss it. Most of us are going to get to the end and think, man, I wasted my life. And God, my prayer is that you would help us to make this room an exception. That we would not have a person in this room who gets to the end of their life feeling that way because of tonight. That tonight would just not be another night where we showed up for a church service and we heard a good message or whatever, but that tonight might be a turning point for us where we realize, man, I only get one dash. I only get one dash. I want to use it wisely. It goes by so fast, I don't get two. God, give me a heart of wisdom and help me to teach me. God, teach me to number my days aright. Help me to know what the next step. God, don't let me leave here without deciding what the next step is for me. How am I going to use my dash wisely? God, speak to our hearts. Help us to know. God, help us to have hearts of wisdom. Help us to use our dash wisely. We pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.